Welcome. You're listening to Body and Mind, a podcast for A Caring Approach. Dr. Carlos Durana, the founder of A Caring Approach, is a clinical psychologist and counselor with over 25 years of experience practicing in Bethesda, Reston, and Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Beverly Jones. In today's episode, Dr. Durana describes his philosophy and integrative approach to individual and couples counseling. He'll also discuss what to expect when working with him, from the initial setup of an appointment to the actual counseling session. Welcome, Dr. Durana.
Thank you. So glad to be here with you.
I would love to know, why did you decide to become a therapist? Was this something that you wanted to do from an early age?
Actually, I think the seeds were there at the early part of my life as a child. And then in my 20s or so, late 20s, I became more aware of what I wanted to do. But early on in my life, there was so much turmoil in my family of origin, so many stresses and challenges that were very painful. And I had a sensitivity towards that painfulness and dysfunction, which I think laid the seeds for later on following this kind of work. I care about people a great deal, just like I care about my family members and in their suffering. So it was a very, very natural unfolding to move in that direction towards helping other people. So really that has been, in a way, my mission, as is in my website. You know, sometimes you write a mission statement, and I did. And it's really about how to help people, how to help diminish pain and suffering, and how to help people find their way in life so that their creativity and their gifts can unfold and they can attain their goals that they want to pursue.
Right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned stress and dysfunction that you had seen. What are some of the reasons you see now for people coming to you? What brings people to your practice?
Well, some people come under a great deal of stress and in some cases suffering. People going through transitions in life that are difficult, whether it be a problem with a job or a separation, a loss of a loved one. Some people come because of anxiety, depression. Some people come because of personality problems in how they manifest themselves with others. Some people come for relationship problems and so on. It's just a variety of things.
So lots of problems or challenges or issues. What happens when these different clients come to your office for the first time? What happens in that initial appointment?
Well, I think the most important thing, I believe, there's certain conditions that are important for therapy to work. And one of those conditions is creating an environment where people feel cared for, they feel supported, they feel respected, and they feel like they can trust you to some degree or another, and that trust develops over time. And because they're coming to share very deeply personal things or interpersonal things. And so that provides a foundation so that the work that we need to do can unfold. It's like a condition, you know, a necessary condition for the work that has to be done in the therapeutic setting to take place. So I do my best to manifest that sense of care and respect and support and take an interest in the person, what things that I like about them. I pay attention to their strengths. I pay attention to what's important to them. I want to know about their life history. I want to know what they're interested in. I want to know about their relationships. And of course, I want to know about why are they here? What is the problem? The main problem or the main two problems that we can work with? And in that process, I'm also assessing, you know, we use different tools for doing that, assessing and as I'm learning about the person. But all the time within that context, as best as I can, to be compassionate, to be understanding.
It sounds as though it's a very non-judgmental environment as well.
Yes, that's essential. it's very difficult to change through through judgment, you know. And another thing that's important for me, I am very respectful of the fact that people have certain strength and inner resources, and that within them there are possibilities for change, for directions of change, you know. I'm not there as a magician trying to create change. I am there working in a collaborative way to help the person or the couple uncover the assets, the strengths, the abilities that are there so that we can use that towards change, yes, towards attaining a goal. Because we are more effective, I believe, when we try to change from a position of strength, tapping into our worthiness, our lovability, and so on, and all the many different things that we have learned in life. Right. So I'm very mindful of that, of attending to that. When I think of education, well, there's a view that, you know, the empty vessel that we put things into people, and that can be helpful to some extent, where I teach skills, coping skills, and things that people can learn. But then there's the other aspect having to do with in education, and I think it's the same in therapy, that has to do with how to draw things out.
Yes.
Okay, and in this case, what we're trying to draw out is a lot of the resources that may be there that people are overlooking, and strengths that also may be there, but they, when they come into counseling or they come discouraged, they come feeling defective often, or something wrong with them, and often they can forget about a lot of the assets that they have as well. And so we can use those resources and those assets as we're trying to help them attain their goals and to change what it is they need to change.
So you said you're not a magician. You're not waving a magic wand.
Right.
And the person is going to improve. They have work to do.
They
when
sure
they
do.
Come to see
they sure
you.
Do. And that's one of, you know, there's some factors in successful therapy. And one of the factors is, as I was mentioning, the therapeutic alliance. It's the alliance that we are working together collaboratively and to attain the goals and whatever it is they want to achieve. I do my part, but they have to do their part. And another factor that's very important is, you know, their capacity for growth and healing, and that they're bringing that. And everyone has a certain capacity. And certainly that's one of the things that is very important to do, to tap into that. And as I was saying earlier, into those resources and that capacity that's there. Everyone has capacity. And so we're tapping into that. And along with that is also their willingness. Their willingness, how much are they willing to put in, what effort they're willing to make. That's also a determinant of the success of therapy.
Yes.
Now, there are other factors that are very important as well. That, you know, the sense of hope is a very important factor in determining success of good therapy. And they bring that. But there are also things that we can do to help a person or a couple engender more of that hope, you know, which is a fundamental aspect of improvement. And one of the ways that can be done, and I was talking earlier about inner resources and strengths, we all have certain self-righting mechanisms in ourselves, natural self-righting mechanisms. And we use that ability whenever, you know, if we have a problem on our own, we will try to develop solutions. We then try to implement those solutions. We mm-hmm. then might get feedback from the environment or from others as to whether it's working or not. And so it's a whole sequence that we do on our own. It's a self-righting mechanism. And we have those. And tapping into those self-righting mechanisms is part of what I'm talking about in terms of tapping into the resources and all of that to enhance that. And as we do that, that sense of hope can grow even more.
Okay. So our attitudes, our willingness to do the work, our willingness to tap into feedback, all of these things contribute.
They do. They do. They're all very important. And of course, our alliance and working together and creating a good therapeutic environment, all of those things go together. And then certainly there's an aspect that has to do with the therapeutic techniques that we use, and that's important, but that is actually not the biggest thing in what contributes to improvement or change.
Really?
Yeah. It's interesting. That's what the research showed. These other factors, you know, the therapeutic alliance between the patient or the client and the therapist, a sense of hope, the capacity for growth and healing that the person brings, all of those are much more important. And then the techniques, and I can talk about what some of the approaches are not as important as a contributing factor, okay? Because if we think, for example, the therapeutic alliance and that sense of support that might be there, that sense of, for example, empathy that, let's say, I might have towards a person when they're telling me a problem, and I can put myself in their shoes and I can empathize with them and I can see their problems from their perspective and try to understand that and validate that, and I can do that with compassion, that is a very important thing. That's something that I do that can be very important and helpful, because they can... that can help them tap into their own compassion for them, you know, kindness towards themselves in a way.
I was going to ask you that, if you're modeling for them.
Yes, certainly. Very important thing to do, as best as I can.
What are the other things that you do, that you model, that clients can take away?
Well, sometimes it's just by a way of questioning, you know, the way that one can question someone. With, let's say, with kindness or, you know, compassion and so on. That in itself, it's a way of modeling. How do they talk to themselves? You know, because basically when someone comes, what they're doing is, in my opinion, is really altering the relationship they have with themselves. So this is a relationship. So my relationship with them and they with themselves.
Yes.
These relationships are going on in the treatment room, right? And so what I'm doing, also, you see, it's a modeling of, well, how can they also relate to themselves? How do they talk to themselves? How can they maybe step back a bit and have some empathy towards, you know, in a sense, towards themselves in a way?
Right.
Okay? So it is a modeling. It is also modeling then in terms of maybe the skills that I'm trying to impart. If we're using some things to help the person, say, deal with their self-talk. And dealing with some skills on how to do that. So you're modeling then skills that they can take that way and so on. So yes, this is also a process of modeling as well. It's an aspect of it.
So this is a very positive experience, or it sounds like it could be a very positive experience, even though clients are coming into you for problems or challenges, if they have the capacity, this can turn into a positive, uplifting experience if they are willing to do a lot of hard work.
If they're willing to do the work, and sometimes it's not positive in the sense of that they can experience feelings of pain that can come up from their history. Also is the challenge of changing something. You're dealing with your own habits. And that is not comfortable at times, right?
Oh, we're
trying
yes.
to change something, you know, I mean, just something like even like exercising and
it hurts.
You get up and then it hurts, right? But then there's a payoff, right?
Right.
But if you're not willing to go to some hurt, you don't get to the payoff. And that's really important. How much is the person really willing to, you know, to go for that payoff? Because I cannot do that for them. I can help them. I can encourage. I can coach, I can do a number of things, create a good climate, provide feedback and all of that. But ultimately, they have to get on the field and go for the run or the walk or whatever metaphor you want to use, right?
Well, then it gets back to using those inner resources, doesn't it?
Right. Helping them tap into their inner, all of that. But they still have to go and do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to challenge yourself. And if you're not willing to challenge yourself, despite whatever support I can provide, then you can't get very far. So it's collaborative, right? It's a collaborative approach.
Right.
I do my part and you do yours, and we work together to support you and challenge you in a good way, a constructive way, so that you can get to what you want. I'll be there with you.
Do you find that most of your clients are willing to do this work?
Many, many people are. And some do what they're ready to do, and that's it. and I have to be respectful. I'm not there to dictate. I'm not there to create goals for people or to judge them if they don't want to do something that they say they want to do and they really don't want to do it, because sometimes we can say, yeah, I really want to do that, but now I'm not willing to put the effort into it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm respectful of that. If that's where you are at, that's where you're at.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Right. But I'll be there with you if you're ready. We work together 100%.
As a guide.
Yeah. Coach, mm-hmm. guide, therapist. Yep.
Dr. Durana, what are some of the therapeutic approaches that you use in counseling?
Well, let me say that what is important to do too is to try to tailor the approach to the person. I often tend to integrate approaches. Some people work better with approaches that are more cognitive in nature, in terms of looking at beliefs and looking at negative beliefs and trying to alter those beliefs, maybe called cognitive behavioral therapy. Some people are more responsive to using an emotional focus approach, where you're paying attention more to the feelings and coping with the feelings and learning to expand our feeling repertoire, because often what we do is we suppress certain feelings as bad, and then that affects our overall level of wellness and mood and so on. And so it's a whole about emotions and feelings. And then I work with another approach that of mindfulness, which is really about mindfulness is that quality of attention that where we can stand back from a situation and witness it with some kindness or compassion to really get a broad perspective, a bird's eye view in a sense. And that's very important, because it's really, really important to become aware that a lot of our thoughts and feelings are not helpful.
Yes.
But we get involved in them and we get wrapped up in them and we believe them and they cause a lot of distress and dysfunction. And so that ability to get a distance from these, you know, thoughts and feelings and so on, to witness them is very, very helpful. We're more than those thoughts and those feelings, in other words, and learning to experience that is highly important and growth producing. Another approach would be, let's say, how do we use our body? You know, I do a lot of mind-body work. You know, there are a lot of physical problems that have emotional, mental aspects to them, you know, that the stresses and also the way we feel, the way we think has an influence on the physical symptoms.
Yes.
And it's important to do that integrative kind of work where we are paying attention to what is our body saying to us. This is more body-centered psychotherapy or body-centered therapy. The body is another signaling system. We can pay attention to our thoughts, to our feelings, to our behavior, but also to our bodies. They're also another signaling system that can tell us what's right, what's wrong, what's problematic, you know?
Yes.
And often that's excluded in therapy work. And I don't think that's so helpful. I think it's important to bring that in. Our body will hold tensions, psychological tensions can be expressed in our bodies, in our neck, in our shoulders, in our gut, in all so many different ways where certain specific feelings or emotions may be lodged.
And a lot of times we try to ignore those symptoms.
We try to ignore them. Or sometimes there's the idea that we somaticize. We have a feeling that's very uncomfortable. We turn it into something physical that at least it's a pain that we can deal with. You know, maybe we can cope better with that. But then at the same time, it becomes problematic as a physical symptom. And so we can use the body in a number of ways. The body is also a reflection of how we feel, how we think, and our posture. You know, when we're feeling down, our head goes down, our shoulders bend over forward, and so on. Or when we feel shame or anxious, you know, our body will express that.
Right.
Our sense of presence in our body is very important in monitoring what's going on with us. And how we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, how we think about ourselves. The body's all the time reflecting, sending signals, speaking always. It never stops. And that's why in communication is so important, because so much of what we communicate is not the content. Maybe 50% is the content, and then the rest is body language and tone. And so it's extremely important, the inclusion of the body in this whole process. And so with all of these approaches, you know, a lot of it has to do with what the person can relate to the most, what's important for them. And maybe, you know, I can express my opinion or something that may be helpful, but if a person doesn't want to go in a certain direction, that's fine. We have to go to use whatever they may be ready for, or, you know, it's compatible with them.
Right.
Right. Right.
There are so many different layers, so many different aspects to a person for you to look at.
Yes, it's quite a bit.
So I can only imagine how challenging it is in couples therapy when you're working with two people instead of one.
Yes, it's rewarding and challenging. Very much so. Very challenging. But it's really very rewarding too, because for me, and as I was describing earlier in terms of my own family of origin and all the pain and suffering there and the tensions there, when I can help a couple to communicate better, to resolve their conflicts more effectively, to enhance their understanding of each other and their level of intimacy or satisfaction, marital satisfaction, that's very rewarding for me, given my own history. And it's also challenging, like you say, because two different people, two different perspectives, maybe looking at one situation from an entirely different perspective, and I have to be fair and balanced in how I see them and be able to empathize with both of them. And sometimes both people can be right in a certain sense, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And so there are many layers to working with couples. And part of which layers we go to, in part, is determined by the contract that we have. Some people may come just for learning skills, communication, conflict resolution, and so on. Learning skills.
Yes.
That could be premarital. That could be just that's all they want, you know. But then deeper work would involve, often we bring into a relationship personal issues that have history, the wounds that we have from our history.
Yes.
And those wounds will often get triggered at some point in the relationship. And it's something that we never hoped that would happen. You know, I married you not to wound me in any way or to do something that's going to, you know, trigger me. But that happens. That will happen. How do we deal with that? How do we cope with that? And so we need skills in coping with that when that is activated, but we also need personal skills on how we deal with ourselves when that's happening. Because one of the worst fights that often happens between people is when both people's wounds are activated at the same time. And there's an escalation that often takes place. And people get stuck in that escalating cycle, and they want to feel heard and understood and cared for at the same time that they're throwing stuff at each other. And because they're defending themselves at the same time, because the wounds were touched and simultaneously in some way. And so the cycle that is not helpful escalates. So what I mean, let's take an example. Let's say there's a woman named, let's call her Mary, and then a husband or spouse named Bob. Let's say that Mary has a wound from her history about not feeling cared for.
Yes.
And when that is touched off for whatever reason, she gets defensive to protect herself. She may blame. Why aren't you doing this for me? You know, you're not good enough as a partner and so on, right? Now, when she does that, well, let me back up. Bob's issues, let's say that he has issues around feeling defective, and criticism is very toxic for him. It touches that wound of defectiveness. And so let's say that Mary feels uncared for, then she gets defensive to protect herself, and then she starts to blame him and attacks him that way. Then he goes into his wound of feeling defective. So then he's going to react by getting defensive. His defensiveness, let's say, is withdrawal. Okay?
Yes.
So he withdraws, distances. When he does that, that affects her. She feels more uncared for. Mm-hmm. You're not paying attention to me and what I need, giving me what I need. Then she becomes more hurt and protective and defensive. She attacks more. She blames more. Then that triggers his wound, which is feeling defective and criticized and defective, right?
Yes.
Which then he goes into his posture of defensiveness, right? Protecting himself by withdrawing further.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a cycle that just goes bing, 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 bing around like a loop. And so there are ways to come out of those cycles. There are ways of, first of all, how do we communicate when that's happening? But also there are skills about self-soothing and how do I take care of myself when I get activated in my wounds? And how do we dialogue? And how do we exit out of those cycles of escalation that we have to escalate? Those cycles are awful. And so this is another way or another layer of work in couples work that is it's very, when you address it effectively, it can be very healing, but it takes work.
It almost seems like too much work. It seems like it would be easier to get out of the relationship.
Well, that's what sometimes happens. You know, the person feels that it's easier to get out of the relationship. But what I tell people is that, you know, you want to work on the relationship with skills, with things that can be helpful, and do that long enough so you've done enough work. And if at that point you feel like it's enough, it's not going to work, then you've earned it. You separate, mm-hmm. you earn it. But it's not like you're not just walking out. And so that's what I tell people about that.
Can you give couples who may be listening some tips on what they can do, some skills they can use to improve their relationships?
Sure, sure. Empathy is a big deal. Empathy is about trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes and trying to understand their perspective and even have validation. And understanding doesn't mean you agree, but you understand, you can validate. Yeah, it makes sense how you're feeling that way, how you're thinking about this. That's extremely important. And that is very hard to do. It takes work. You have to put your own perspective aside as best as you can. But it's very powerful when we can do that for each other or for anybody else. Yes. You know, and I think, as I was saying, in the individual counseling, when I do that with other people, it's very helpful to them. Feeling heard, feeling understood, validated. Mind reading, it's a problem in relationships. We often expect or hope that our partner is going to mind read what we need and want.
Oh, yes.
And then we don't say what we need and want, because, of course, that makes us vulnerable. And also, if you love me, you would know what I need and want. And so we expect, if you love me, really, you should know what I need and want. And if you're not doing that, it's because you don't love me. And then maybe this is a flawed relationship because of that. So cutting across that mind reading is very, very important. You know, it takes a certain level of vulnerability to do that. Say, I need something from you.
Yes, absolutely.
Just, you know, saying that is hard because, you know, we may think of ourselves, no, I don't need such and such, or I don't need you that way, you know? And so it's an act of courage to do that. And
or if I tell you what I need, what if you say no?
That's the other part of it. Excellent. Yeah, exactly. What if you say no? Then you feel rejected. You feel you don't really care. So it's you know, relationships do take a lot of risk that way. But then if we don't risk enough, then the quality of the relationship suffers.
So we have to risk being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Are there any other tips that you would like to share?
Well, a big one is I statements, what is called I statements, where I talk about what's going on with me rather than saying, you did this to me, I'm blaming you or calling you names or whatever. Just talking about, hey, what just happened? I felt upset about that, or I feel hurt about that. Or, you know, you're talking about yourself. Those are called I statements.
Right.
This is what's happening with me right now. You know, when you just said such and such, I feel sad about this, the situation, or I feel upset, or I feel hurt, or it's using I statements.
Yes.
That is another biggie.
They're all so helpful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for sharing all of these approaches and tips and the methods that you use. If someone would like to work with you, they can go to your website, right? To www.caringapproach.com. But they can also call you.
Yes.
And your number is 703-408-4965. Thank you so much, Dr. Duran. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Well, thank you. Your questions were great. I enjoy being here. It's a pleasure. Thank you.